First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
North Florida is still the national hotspot for COVID-19. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, one in every 813 people in this city is in the hospital right now with COVID. The local group Doctors Fighting COVID says Florida is failing on fighting the virus and keeping us safe. We'll speak with their leader in a moment. Give us a call, 549-2937. Then later, how a local surfer is making a big splash on national TV this month. But first this hour, the Florida Board of Education says it is going to punish two school districts around the state who are enforcing mask mandates for students. Both Broward and Alachua counties have defied the governor and his commissioner of education, Richard Corcoran, as the Delta variant of COVID-19 surges throughout the state. They say they will continue to enforce mask mandates in their districts despite threats from Tallahassee. Meanwhile, in our area, a local group of doctors is doing everything they can to raise the alarm and urge educators and city leaders to institute stronger safety protocols. We are the national epicenter for the virus right now, with about one in every 800 people hospitalized with COVID. Our ICUs are almost at full capacity. Dr. Nancy Stotz is a physician in Jacksonville and a member and founder of the organization Doctors Fighting COVID, and she's on the line. Dr. Stotz, good to have you back on the show. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
And as we speak with Doctors Fighting COVID, we want your calls, 549-2937. Join us. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open, as always. So the State Board of Education met yesterday, Dr. Stotz, and they vowed to bring down some sort of punishment on both Broward and Alachua counties. Those school districts are defying the state, and they say they will enforce mask mandates. You and your organization, Doctors Fighting COVID, sent a letter to the members of the State Board of Education. Tell us what you are asking them to do.
Yes, thank you for the question. It's basically very simple when you get down to it. We, as you mentioned, are in right now the epicenter of epicenters. We are extremely hot spot. We have a 24% positive test rate. We have less than 7 or 8% of our ICU beds available. We have a huge number of people hospitalized, and we're waiting for the inevitable, which is deaths to occur. So as schools open, unfortunately for children 11 years old and younger, they are not eligible to be vaccinated. So the next best thing that we have, and the only thing we have to protect them, is to get as many folks around them vaccinated, and then while they're in an indoor group, then and with other people, they need to have masks on. And it's very basic. We are also asking for more transparent data and really asking also about where the funds are. But those are really secondary to our main requests, which are an immediate mandatory indoor mask usage among our school children and encouraging full-throated encouragement of vaccines.
For all teachers and staff?
Everyone who's eligible. That would include children 12 and older as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, certainly in Duval County, a minority of parents has signed the opt-out form. I think it's between 4 to 5% letting
right.
their child out of masking. Mask compliance varies widely from school to school is what we're hearing. So, as we see this situation playing out around the state, what are your thoughts about this? Because two districts in particular, Dr. Stotz, are telling the governor basically to pound sand. They're saying, we're going to enforce these mandates to protect our student body, and we don't care if you withhold our paychecks. The White House has even gotten involved in this now. The Department of Education, the Federal Department of Education, is now saying they're going to provide support to these Florida school districts. In Duval County, there is a mask mandate with the opt-out form. St. Johns County has no mandate. It's optional. So how do you, how is this sitting with you as the head of Doctors Fighting COVID? What's going on around the state?
Excuse me. Sorry. So what I would say is, you're right. The important numbers here are that the number of folks who have formally opted out is a minority. It ranges in Hillsborough and Palm Beach and Duval. Looking at all the numbers, it's single digits to low teens. So it isn't really that the majority of parents really want to opt out. But unfortunately, the rights of those who want to opt out seem to be superseding the rights of students who want to have a safe environment, and the rights of students with special needs, for instance, who can't wear a mask and really require that everyone else has one on. What's striking to me is we do need to enforce these rules that we've made, and for some reason there seems to be reticence, and we need to get beyond that. We need to, as I said, full-throatedly encourage vaccines. But I was listening to the meeting last night with the state health board of education, and I couldn't think of a great analogy other than it feels like these superintendents and school boards have a busload of children that they are trying to get out of a wildfire, and the authorities are basically pulling them over for speeding. That's the only way I could think about it, because they're doing the best they can. This is what leaders do. They assess the situation, look at what is the current climate for the situation, how do I provide for a safe and complete education, and if we don't do this, we are going to end up with schools closed down one way or another, because the virus will be rampant. We're already seeing very large numbers of positive cases, much, much outpacing last year, and yet we have more lax policies than we had last year. So it's completely nonsensical.
In Hillsborough County schools, over 5,000 students are already quarantined. It's just unbelievable. Mm-hmm. There have been some questions raised about contact tracing and the method to inform parents in our school districts in our part of the state who's positive for COVID. Teachers and parents have expressed concern that they're not getting complete information. Now, let me ask you, Dr. Stotz, for those who don't believe kids are at risk from COVID, particularly this Delta variant, can you please explain what the risk is to children?
Right. Well, it's on the face value surface, more adults than children are hospitalized, but that's always the case. For example, we have about a 10-to-1 ratio of ICU beds for adults versus children, because let's face it, children, by and large, are healthy. If they have a problem, it's a minor problem. If you require hospitalization, and we have many, many, many children in the hospital, dozens every day in this state are being hospitalized. If this were a shooting episode in schools that was putting dozens of children in the hospital, some of whom won't survive, we would be outraged. Where is the outrage? It's mind-boggling. We have almost no pediatric ICU beds left. So there's a real concern. This is having an impact on folks who don't even get COVID, because we don't have bed capacity. We are stressing our healthcare workers to the brink. And, you know, I just worry what tomorrow brings. Every day is a new worry.
549-2937. Our guest is Dr. Nancy Stotz, co-founder of the group Doctors Fighting COVID. Stephen in St. Augustine. Hi, Stephen. Good morning. Go
Hello.
Ahead, Stephen. You're on the air, Stephen.
Oh, good morning. What I'm calling about is a couple of things. The doctor just referenced that children, by and large, are unaffected by COVID in terms of serious illness. And that's a fact that's been borne out by all the data that's been accumulated over the last 17 months. The other thing is, with regard to adult patients that are treated in hospitals, is that the survival rate has gone up dramatically. The case fatality ratio has dropped considerably. What I'm asking is, why is there such an emphasis on vaccinating children who serve, it really serves no purpose?
You can't vaccinate children. Yeah. Kids under 12 cannot
vaccinated. Children that are 12 years old and over.
Right, but not that many of them are. I mean, a lot of parents are still hanging back on that.
Well, correct. The prior argument with regard to children was they were going to carry the virus back and infect the older people who were vulnerable to the virus.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's been a concerted effort to vaccinate the people that are vulnerable. Now, we should be emphasizing that aspect, protecting the vulnerable people that remain. The majority of the people that are in your ICU and in your hospital are not children and they're not young adults. They still are people 40, 50, 60, and 70 and 80 years old.
Well, that's and Stephen,
okay.
You know,
can I respond?
Absolutely. Stephen, let me just say that we do focus on that cohort of people too all the time. And we will continue to do so. That said, the reason we're focusing on this today is because the State Board of Education met yesterday on this matter. Dr. Stotz.
Right. Thank you for that. So I have a couple of comments. First of all, I think the caller has a point when it came to the original form of coronavirus. However, with Delta, we are seeing children get much, much sicker than what we saw with the original. So we have to acknowledge that the environment has changed. The science has changed. We need to accept the reality of what the numbers are showing us. And they're showing us that a lot more kids are getting sick enough to go to the hospital. Think about that. Sick enough to go to the hospital. The other thing is death, frankly, is too low a bar in my book. If death is the only thing that you want to protect your child from, there are long-term injuries from having COVID that we are not 100% clear on. Children, we know, get scarring in their lungs. They can have neurologic effects. There's lots of long-term problems. Adults can have kidney problems and other issues. So to say that, well, did you die? No. Well, then, what are you worried about? And why not get vaccinated? If I just could say, you know, for 1 minute, doctors don't care who you vote for. We treat everybody. But I would just point out that our former president, our current governor, the governor of Texas, our mayor, and 96% of medical doctors are all vaccinated. So if there are folks out there who think they have a line of information that is not available to all those people, you know, I'm all ears, tell me, because everything I see as a physician and a scientist tells me there is just no reason not to get vaccinated.
We have calls about that as the vaccination push continues. This area is about half vaccinated. Mike in Jacksonville. Hi, Mike. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, and thank you so much for taking my call. And Doc, we appreciate everything that you're doing. And just the people in the medical community, I can't believe the sacrifice that they've made. This whole thing is absolutely tough. The thing, and the couple of questions I had, if somebody did have COVID and they have the antibodies, does it help with the Delta variant? And then I had one more question after that.
Okay, let's answer that one first. Dr. Stotz?
Okay. So a natural infection versus a vaccination differs in a couple different ways. One is with a vaccination, there's a double exposure to the antigen. So we know how to we're sort of tricking the body into thinking it's had the infection, if you think about it that way, with a vaccine. We give a shot. You might have a you know, some small side effect. And then 2 weeks later or 3 weeks later or 4 weeks later, we give a second shot. And that creates a memory among certain T cells that so that when it is exposed to that virus again, it can mount a better response without getting too much into the weeds. When you have a natural exposure, it's not as certain how much antigen load you're actually being exposed to. So it could be quite small, and you might have a very small response, and that response could wane in any number of time period. We do believe once you have an acute infection, you should have some natural antibodies for some period of time, whether it's 3, 6, 8, 9 months, we're not sure. And there is evidence that people who had the primary infection can get reinfected with the Delta quite easily. In fact, my colleagues who are on the front line in the ER will tell me time and time again how many people come in and say, this can't be COVID, I had COVID, but are you vaccinated? So there is a difference. It does seem to be meaningful. It's a little hard to track because some people think they had COVID, but did they really have COVID because some of them didn't get tested? So I don't mean to be elusive. I'm just telling you from what we know, it appears that the vaccine provides superior defense against future infections. And if you have had an infection, it's possible that only one shot is necessary, but the data is still out on that.
Okay.
But you definitely need at least one.
And Mike, did you have one more question?
I did. I had a I don't know if it's a comment or even a question about the vaccination and hesitancy. The best example I can use is, you know, anything like, and I'll use ivermectin for an example, that comes out that is a possible remedy or treatment against COVID, right away it gets taken down from a YouTube post or a Google search. I mean, I even had a friend of mine that sent me a text in regard to ivermectin and a post site, and I go look at my text after a couple of days, and now it's blank. It's
We're not going
really
to promote ivermectin, Mike, on this program for a number of reasons. The chief among them being that it is not a recommended treatment for COVID-19.
Right, not even emergency use.
And so. There are, I can't tell you how many listeners out there have asked me to talk about ivermectin on this show. Most of the people who are pushing ivermectin seem to have some sort of vaccine hesitancy, and they think this might be the magic bullet that can protect them. It's not. And there's an article that has been forwarded to me by someone that wrote an op-ed piece in the Wall Street Journal touting ivermectin. What that article failed to elucidate was that a long-term study on ivermectin that was touted as being proof that it works and that it's safe and effective was a highly flawed study. It's a horse dewormer. Don't take it for COVID. Get the vaccine, period.
Right.
Dr. Stotz.
Right. Yes. If there were ever a time when the adage, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, it's with COVID. The preventive measures are so safe and so effective, and the treatments are strictly meh. You know, they're okay. The monoclonal antibodies may have a place, but if you're just diminishing your hospital stay, does that sound to you like a great deal? I would just encourage everyone, an ounce of prevention is worth multiple pounds of cure in this case. Please get vaccinated.
Rob emails the show. My friend teaches at a private school where masks were mandated last year and this year. The kids are happy, productive, and deal with the masks with the support of teachers and responsive parents. For those of you who say you don't want your child to wear a mask and are hindered in their learning, this is on you, the parent. You can instill a dread in your child by your attitude. Why would you put your child and others' health at risk? I am perplexed by this political wedge in our society that places the whole of society at risk, he says. Helen in St. Augustine. Hi, Helen.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to respond and thank the physician that you have on the show this morning. She talked about the effects of COVID on children. And I just wanted to say that my teenage daughter, who's a junior in high school here in St. Augustine, picked it up at school, and that was on Christmas Eve, right before the break ended. She must have caught it. And she has had months of pain in her chest, thousands of dollars of testing, as well as now she's on a permanent inhaler because of the scarring in her lungs. And I know everybody responds to COVID differently, but it is very real for teenagers. And my daughter's a nationally competitive athlete, and she has had to revamp her entire life surrounding this COVID and the effects on her. So it is quite real for children of all ages.
It is, Helen, and I'm so sorry you're dealing with that and she's dealing with that. Thank you for calling. Our own producer, Heather Schatz, has an 11-year-old son who has been dealing with long COVID for many months, Dr. Stotz. He was very seriously ill, and they still don't know what his long-term issues might be. He has lung damage. He was isolated in his room, an 11-year-old kid, for weeks on end. And it's just been incredibly traumatic for their family. So for anyone out there who thinks that kids can't get sick, well, you're simply wrong.
Exactly.
And so, you know, Dr. Stotz, it's very frustrating, I have to disclose as a parent, to see this kind of attitude, because you want to think that people are looking out not only for their own children, but also all children. And it's very disheartening to see that not everyone feels that way.
Right. And I don't want to overstate the number of people who don't want their children masked. I do think, you know, I'm an eternal optimist, and I do believe the vast majority of parents want their child to be masked and kept as safe as possible and try to protect others. I think there's...
The polling reflects that in Florida, by the way. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry?
I said the polling reflects that a majority of Florida residents do feel that way. Yeah.
Right. So the problem is just the implementation of it. And like you point out, parents have a great deal of influence over how their child will respond to anything. But by and large, what we've seen is children are incredibly adaptable, and they want to be in person, and we desperately want them to be in person. We know it's the best for their mental health, but we can't keep the schools open if we don't try to mitigate this. And the way to get out of this is through science. We can't legislate our way out of this virus. There's nothing political about that. It's just the facts.
Here's a tweet from a listener. Is there any way to help teenagers who want to get vaccinated but whose parents are anti-vax? These kids are scared. Doctor, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe minors in Florida can get the vaccine without parental approval. What is
correct?
Is that right?
I think that is correct. Unfortunately, that's not the case. What I would say, if the children are in that situation, the schools are good about helping in terms of providing a form that just needs a parental signature. And maybe there's one parent who is on the fence about it, and would they be willing to sign and protect their child? I think it's so sad, and I've seen this, where people are afraid to admit to their own family members that either they would like a vaccine or got a vaccine. And, you know, to think that we've come to this point is very sad. But I would just say, you know, look for information from trusted sources. The American Academy of Pediatrics and the CDC all support vaccination of children 12 and over. And it won't be too long before we get, other school-age children, the 5 to 11 range, should be approved in the next 4 to 6 months. So we're excited about that. We're almost, you know, to a tipping point. And so we just need to work together a little bit longer.
Michael in St. John's County. Hi, Michael.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for taking my call. So I have an open question, or perhaps a comment in general. So, you know, all this discussion about people who don't want to get vaccinated, it's, quite honestly, it's getting old. You know, if people don't want to get vaccinated, that's their business. But what I have to say is the following. They are taking up capacity in the healthcare system, and they are also taking making the whole society have pay a cost for that silly decision. So my point is, if they choose not to get vaccinated, why are they still being covered by, you know, insurance on a regular basis? Or why are they being charged the same as everybody else who don't take a silly decision? So if they want to go unvaccinated, that's their business, but they should be paying either higher co-payments or just higher premiums in general.
Thank you, Michael.
On top of the fact that they are taking the whole care.
Thank you for that. You know, Dr. Stotz, people who smoke, I mean, there is precedent for this kind of thing in medicine and in the insurance world.
Yes.
What do you think?
I think there could come a point where that could be an issue. I think at this particular time, our house is on fire. And so we need to respond to the current fire by trying our best to squelch the virus. I have read from different sources that some insurance companies would be considering it because, you know, charging extra premium. Because let's face it, a hospitalization for COVID runs, from my understanding, $40,000 to $50,000 on average, which is crazy high amount of money. And for something that is quite easily preventable, you know, it does raise that issue. But that's not my area of expertise, and I can't comment on the economics of it other than to say, again, an ounce of prevention.
Exactly. People pushing ivermectin, and it's sort of the new hydroxychloroquine.
Mm-hmm.
It's as though people are casting about for anything other than the obvious move, which is to get vaccinated.
Exactly.
So, and it's unfortunate. Get vaccinated, folks. Get tested if you need that, and mask up. It's simple. Thank you, Dr. Nancy Stotz, founder of Doctors Fighting COVID. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Melissa.
Much more still ahead. Later in the hour, some good news for your midweek. We need some. And up next.
You can think about the people who are building our homes, the people who are fixing our roads, people who are out there at times that it's extremely hot doing the things that we depend on.
Florida is getting hotter all the time. In fact, a new report says before much longer, it will just be too hot to work outside at all. That's after this. A new report finds it's literally going to be too hot outside at some point to work in Florida. Soaring temperatures will affect workers in dozens of industries here in the Sunshine State. I learned more from Rachel Licker, PhD, senior climate scientist with the Union of Concerned Scientists. Hi, Rachel. Good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is really important information that everybody in Florida needs to hear. Tell us about this report, Too Hot to Work. This is about people working outdoors in Florida and how bad it's going to get. What are you finding?
Exactly. Well, what we did was a national analysis in which we coupled projections of how the heat index or feels like temperature is likely to change across this century as a result of global warming with census data to look at the number of workdays that could become unsafe because of extreme heat and the earnings that could be at risk as a result. And what we found is that Florida is literally the hotbed of this study and really has a lot to risk. And Florida has a lot. And Florida stands to lose a lot if we don't take aggressive action on climate change.
That's right. We're talking about billions in lost wages across the state, but in some counties in particular, right?
Yes, that's right. So what we found is that by mid-century, with no action on climate change, the state of Florida could see $8.4 billion of earnings at risk in an average year. And like you said, you know, that's not distributed equally across the state. For example, we found that Monroe County, Pasco County, those are counties where outdoor workers could be above average levels of earnings at risk. And we saw that, you know, there could be more than a month's worth of days at risk of being too hot to work across the state.
So when we say too hot to work, we're talking about construction workers, landscape architects, people working for utility companies, garbage pickup people, all kinds of occupations. Let's see, 23% of Florida's total workforce. That's a lot of people. 2 million outdoor workers.
Yeah, that's right. So exactly. Florida has about 2 million outdoor workers. We found that about 23% of those work in construction and extraction occupations. So we can think about the people who are building our homes, the people who are fixing our roads, you know, people who are out there at times that it's extremely hot doing the things that we depend on.
So this analysis is following on the heels of the latest IPCC climate report, just showing the urgency of this situation, that we need to get much more aggressive about curbing carbon emissions, investing in net zero solutions, limiting extreme heat. And in a state like Florida, this can't come soon enough.
That's exactly right. I mean, Florida is not a stranger to extreme heat already, obviously, and hasn't been for a long time. But, you know, what we found is that there's a really big difference, you know, across the state if we take action on climate change or if we don't. You know, we can, for example, you know, in Jacksonville, we can prevent it from getting to the point in which at mid-century we'd have about 27 days in the average year that are too hot to work, and keep that down to about 18 if we took some action on climate change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you also want Congress to adopt legislation that would set protective standards for outdoor workers, correct?
That's right. There's currently a piece of legislation that's been introduced called the Asunción Valdivia Heat Illness and Fatality Prevention Act. That's named after a California farm worker who died after harvesting grapes for 10 hours straight in triple-digit conditions. And, you know, these deaths are preventable, quite frankly. And so what we're trying to advocate for is that in light of what we're finding here, that basic preventative measures, basic protections are afforded to outdoor workers so that they don't die on the job, so that they don't get heat-related illness, and that they aren't faced with a choice of, should I go to work and get a paycheck or stay safe?
Rachel, thank you. This report is available now, and there's even an interactive mapping tool that you can look at to see where extreme heat will affect your zip code. Rachel Licker, PhD, senior climate scientist with the Union of Concerned Scientists, the new study, Too Hot to Work. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Well, speaking of extreme weather, it is hurricane season right now in Florida. Tropical storm Fred passed through the panhandle, and a new storm, Grace, is expected to head into the Gulf of Mexico this week. Things have been quiet in our neck of the woods so far, but you do need to be prepared. Right now, we're pleased to welcome Chris Ryan, Project Manager, and Pauline Gary, Marketing and Business Development, both with ServPro in Jacksonville. Hey, guys.
Hey, good morning. Hey,
good morning.
Okay, Chris, let's start with you. I'm going to knock on Formica when I ask you this first question, because you know we're always a little superstitious at this time of year. Let's hope for a quiet storm season in Jacksonville through the fall. That said, we've all learned the hard way how important it is to be prepared. We could get hit by a bad storm or more than one. You guys come in and help with cleaning and rebuilding after the storm. So tell us what your mindset is right now as we keep our eye on the forecast and the weather and the storms developing out in the ocean.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's one of those things where you never really know how it's hard to prepare for it too far ahead of time just because of how quickly these storms can form. But again, like with that being said, you can never be too prepared. So it's we're always with the position that we're in, we're always ready for disasters like this. I mean, not only do they happen here in Jacksonville, they happen all over the country, and so like we're always ready to be able to travel all over the country. So with you know with that being the case, we're always ready with you know employees and. Equipment, vehicles, everything that needs to be done. So.
Sure. But for people that might be new to the area or they haven't reviewed their plan, what are the basic things people need to have in mind if we do look as though a storm is coming our way?
Yeah, you always want to try and put together a plan of action if a storm comes. And with that being said, like, you know, some of the important things are, you know, gather personal, you know, items that have value or electronic value, something you want to grab everything, try to get it off the floor in case of any kind of flooding. It's also good to have quite a bit of documentation when it comes to taking photos or videos of your home and your personal effects in case that those items do get damaged when there is a storm that comes through. So.
Sure. And if you need to evacuate, turn everything off, obviously. Bring your first aid kit, your important documents. This is all on your website. Pauline Gary, people can check ServProJacksonvilleSouth.com and sort of refresh themselves on what they need to be doing this season to protect their property.
Absolutely, yes. Our website is JacksonvilleSouth.com, and we've got a whole host of information and tools there on our website that just kind of outline really what should be in everybody's first aid kit, their emergency contacts, et cetera. And as you know, Melissa, we've been in this community for over 15 years, and we just expanded our team with the acquisition of ServPro of Jacksonville Westside Orange Park. So we're really prepared to handle any size disaster, and we are available 24/7.
Right, and let's be clear. You guys really specialize in water damage. The last thing anybody wants is that, because then you're dealing possibly with mold. And so that's really the big concern, I think, for so many homeowners and business owners, right?
Yes, absolutely. Just even within 24 hours, I mean, mold can start to become a problem. And as you know, here in Northeast Florida in particular, it definitely can be a problem. So that's why it's important to get a team of experts like ours in there to really remediate the situation and really take care of your valuables as soon as possible. But in addition to water and mold, we also take care of fire. And we're doing a lot of proactive and confirmed case COVID cleaning right now as well. So we're available to help with all those things as well.
Is this covered by insurance? Either one of you take this. Say somebody needs to hire you after storm damage unfortunately befalls them. Can they claim it?
Yes, typically you can. I mean, you know, obviously it's going to depend on the coverages that you carry with your insurance policy, but most of the time it's going to be a covered loss.
That's
whether
good.
It's through your insurance policy or, you know, organization like FEMA.
Okay. And outside of hurricanes, Chris, mold is an issue for homeowners all year round because this is a damp state. What do you recommend people do to protect against that?
Yearly services of your air conditioning units. Typically when your ACs go bad, that's normally going to be your number one culprit when it comes to certain microbial growth issues in your home. And then if you do have any some sort of water leak or, you know, some sort of water disaster in your home, getting it taken care of as quickly as possible and getting it dried out within a timely manner.
The key, Pauline, is to just, we say this every storm season, don't wait until disaster strikes. Be prepared. Have a plan. Most people out here, out there listening to this conversation know this, but it always bears repeating.
Yes, absolutely. And as you know, we worked with WJCT and the Florida Radio Emergency Network this year to kick off a storm summit. And we actually did it earlier this year. And so Jeff Huffman, who's the chief meteorologist there, you know, had even said we suspect that it's going to be a very active storm season. And as you know, we've already seen quite a bit of activity. So the key is be prepared and don't wait. And so we're hoping to get this message out to the communities so that we can continue to serve our community as best as possible.
Yeah, and thank you for mentioning the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network. WJCT 89.9 FM is a member of this statewide network. If all other sources of information go out, if you lose power at your house, for example, in a major storm and you can't turn on the television, the radio will always be on. I can't tell you how many times people told us after Hurricane Irma they had to go and sit in their car and listen to the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network via 89.9 and get updates on what was going on with the storm. So be mindful of that wherever you are in the state and follow Florida Storms on Twitter as well to get updates during storm season from the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network. We have some excellent meteorologists keeping the state up to date, and it's just a great service. So thank you so much, Chris Ryan, Project Manager, and Pauline Gary, Director of Marketing, Serve Pro Jacksonville. Thank you both.
Thank you so much, Melissa.
Okay, a quick break. And in a moment.
This show was a golden ticket to making the World Tour, which is the tour I've been competing on with the World Surf League, was opportunity to go on TV and get to compete for this pretty prestigious wild card spot on the World Tour in three events with pretty much everyone there was fighting for.
Jack's Beach's own star surfer Kayla Durden makes national TV. We'll tell you about her moment in the spotlight and some other good news for your week. That's coming up next. You're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9.
Announcing Vickers Landing at Oak Bridge, bridging retirees with an all-new Ponte Vedra Beach community featuring new homes, a resort lifestyle, and a life plan for every stage of aging. Information at VickersLanding.com.
Storm season is here, and JEA is doing everything possible to prepare. And you can, too, by updating your contact information and signing up for alerts. You can stay up to date on power restoration efforts. Update your contact info today at JEA.com.
The Jacksonville area is home to two Navy bases, a Coast Guard headquarters, and a major National Guard base.
It's an important city when it comes to national security. Join the American Security Project at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, August 24th, in partnership with ADAPT to learn about how our region's military installations are rising to meet the threat of climate change. Reserve your ticket now at wjct.org/events.
On the next Fresh Air, writer Eyal Press talks about people working in jobs most of us would never want to do because they're difficult and punishing and in some way morally compromised. He interviewed prison mental health workers and correctional officers, oil rig workers, slaughterhouse employees, and military drone operators. His new book is Dirty Work. Join us.
Today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
As states set new records for COVID-19 hospitalizations, medical administrators are struggling to hire enough workers to keep their emergency rooms running.
We've had people literally walk off the job because they couldn't take it anymore.
How do we take better care of those who take care of us? That story next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, Girls Inc. of Jacksonville has a new CEO. Darlene Vaughn takes the reins of the organization after working as executive director at Communities in Schools of Indiana. And she says now more than ever, we need to support girls in this community.
I've had quite a bit of experience working with youth, and I think this has helped me in my role with Girls Inc. of Jacksonville. Girls Inc. is in a wonderful place right now. My predecessor left Girls Inc. in a great spot. And so we're really in a spot to think about how we want to grow and expand and build upon the work that's already been done, particularly with girls and the issues that we know are facing girls. Mm-hmm. From the pandemic, we know that girls are facing learning loss. A lot of the girls, especially the girls that we serve, are part of that digital divide who did not have access to technology. And so how do we best meet the needs of those girls? Not only the girls that we currently serve, but also expanding our operations so that we can serve more girls.
Check it out and support that great organization at girlsincjax.org. And here's some more good news for your week. 27-year-old Kayla Durden of Jacksonville Beach is a star surfer. In fact, she's so good, you can catch her on national TV next week. She'll be appearing on the ABC hit, The Ultimate Surfer. Kayla told me what's in store. Hey, Kayla, good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
So tell us all about the show and everything you're doing right now.
Yeah, so I just was a part of a show on ABC called The Ultimate Surfer. It's like a reality competitive surfing show. I've been a competitive surfer for the last 12 years, I'd say, competing professionally and getting to travel the world. And this show kind of was a golden ticket to making the World Tour, which is the tour I've been competing on with the World Surf League, was to qualify for the World Tour. So, you know, to get that opportunity to go on TV and, you know, get to compete for this, you know, pretty prestigious wild card spot on the World Tour in three events. Was pretty much everyone that was fighting for. So that was pretty much what I've been up to.
Now, this premieres August 23rd, so we can all watch you on national TV doing your stuff. How exciting is that going to be for you and your family and friends here in Jacksonville?
It's so unreal. I think, you know, when I signed up, obviously, it was for the surfing side of it. And then lately, to be watching these trailers on TV and on ABC during like the NBA Finals and just kind of realizing the gravity of what I've just done is really cool. And I, you know, my parents are already so excited to watch, and all my friends at home, and you know, Jacksonville's really like rallied behind me, which is really amazing and pretty special. So I think just to see it, you know, on a big network like ABC is pretty surreal.
Sure. And you have been a surfer from childhood, right? You've always loved it.
Yeah, so I grew up anything that my older brother did, I wanted to do, and he was a surfer, and my dad was a surfer. So when I saw my brother surfing, I was like, oh, great, of course, now I have to do this too. So, you know, I had my dad take me out like five and got really into it. Just like, it was just really fun. And then, you know, kind of the older I got, the better I got and started kind of making money at it. So it turned into a career, but it really just started out as I just loved it. And I love surfing and my family does it together.
Well, we really are looking forward to watching you on The Ultimate Surfer on ABC on August 23rd. Kayla Durden, thanks so much, and keep in touch.
Of course. Tune in. Thank you, guys.
Well, Baptist Medical Center South is one of many hospitals inundated with COVID patients right now. That's why the Rotary Club of Ponte Vedra, with the help of the One Jax Institute, is stepping up to feed frontline workers. Nocatee resident Bob Wildfong and other members of Rotary helped to organize pizza deliveries to Baptist South healthcare workers last night.
Well, we are, in a nutshell, basically gathering resources and money and people power to provide dinner for the people that are being worked into these double and triple shifts right now to cover for COVID. So tonight we are gathering and we are working with Pyology, a restaurant here in the Nocatee area that is going to provide enough pizzas, and we bought enough drinks with our donations to basically give the medical personnel at Baptist South a dinner on us that we'll deliver to the hospital this evening and transfer without going in. And we just want them to know, hey, we're thinking about you. Thank you for doing what you do. And here, hopefully, is a little break from the work.
Nice going, Bob Wildfong. And he says more deliveries are planned tomorrow, so Venmo him your donations. And finally, creator and producer Joanne Mafia is presenting her new project, The Making of Hammer and Rain, Reflections Through Time. This documentary film premieres online next Tuesday, August 23rd. It focuses on the shift you feel after turning 50 and represents diverse female voices. Joanne brought her vision to life after receiving an Art Ventures grant last year. Congrats, Joanne. If you've got some good news for our weekly menu, drop us a line for our What's Good Wednesdays. And thanks for listening. Thanks also to senior producer Heather Schatz, director Josh Torres, associate producer Catherine Hobbs, editorial director Jessica Palumbo, and digital editor Bill Bortsfield. Get in touch at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org and catch our podcast up later today on all platforms, including the WJCT app. I'm Melissa Ross. This has been First Coast Connect on WJCT News, 89.9 Jacksonville. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. In the meantime, mask up, be safe, and get that vaccine.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.